We start the Greg Wyshynski Show proper, shall we?
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Well, again, listen, you're one of my favorite guests. I appreciate you coming on the program.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
Dude, I know. Listen, I wish I could spend like a full hour or more on the podcast.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Hey, it's me, Greg Wyshynski, along here with Pat Donahue, who is the director of digital media for the LA Kings. And we're at South by Southwest, as you can hear by the music in the background. I'm going to have to get clearance for this. But Pat just got done with his panel, which I missed because I was eating fried chicken at the food court of food trucks down the street, which, by the way, was really tasty. They put a little jalapeno in the mix. I got to admit, I was pretty impressed with it. But you just did a panel on social media, and how did that go?
It went very well. I spoke with a man named Brian Cheek, who runs Pastano, who do a lot of our social visualizations and things that, you know, displays that we can do, whether they're online or in arena. And Megan from the Red Sox, and I don't remember the other girl's name.
No, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Brian, is there any chance Brian's middle name was Tungan?
I think so.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that'd be perfect. That's what I would name him, at least, if I was his mom or dad.
For those wondering what the background noises are, there's a man swimming in the beautiful pool that's directly next to us.
Yeah, we should set the scene. We're at the Four Seasons here. All of the panels for the South by Southwest Sports are taking place here, including a podcasting room that Bill Simmons is in, and my hockey fighting panel is here tomorrow at 5. And all the other stuff is happening here, too, so it's very exciting.
There's an NBC Sports lawn that everyone seems to be hanging out at.
Yeah, and actually, they also have, like, free beer that I didn't realize that when I used the cash... I was at the cash bar that was literally 3 feet away from the free bar for NBC. I felt like that episode of Extras where Ricky Gervais slips a 20 to the maitre d' at the club to get on the other side of the velvet rope, and his friends sit down directly next to him at the velvet rope. It was like that kind of thing.
But doesn't Yahoo send you here, Greg?
Well, yeah, Yahoo sent me here for this mission. Now, a lot of people think that like I orchestrated this to come and eat food and drink beer and watch movies, but they actually asked me to come and do a hockey panel, which I thought was really cool.
I'm absolutely here to eat food and watch movies.
When you do a panel like this about the LA Kings Twitter feed and their social media reach, what is the message you're trying to convey? What did you say to these people about what you guys do?
The first thing that I try to get across is that we're a lot more than a Twitter feed, which is what most people know us for.
You're also an NHL team.
Yes, we are an NHL team who wins Stanley Cups.
Sure.
And we do a lot more than that. Like, we're the whole digital department, so we do advertising, social media, and everything from billboards to what we do online to sponsorships. But the main thing to get across is I think that Twitter is too PC and boring. So I'd like for people to start having more fun, much like our friends in Lumbus. I think are a good example of having, even though they're not a winning team, they, you know, a lot of our success came because we rolled over teams in the playoffs
right.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
And then last year we really had fun with 7 games and being able to play these teams and kind of have fun with their fans. Like Game 7 of Chicago, I knew who all their fans were that were going to tweet at us. And I knew kind of how to respond to each of them and kind of, you know, how to engage with these different people.
When did you take over the feed?
2011.
Okay. Has the environment changed dramatically since 2011 insofar as what you can say, what you can't say, and what the reaction is? Or is it the same? Is it still tap dancing on a landmine when you try to be funny on Twitter? By the way, that's a Steven Tyler lyric. I'm not going to try to claim that as my own.
I thought you were getting real clever out here.
No.
It has changed in the sense that in 2011 and 12, we were the 8th seed, and we could do whatever the hell we wanted.
Right.
Like, we had never won a Stanley Cup in 40-something years.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, the franchise was nothing in the terms of, like, the NHL. So we have to compete with all these other hockey teams and all these other people in LA. So it was much snarkier than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And much more, I would write jokes. Like, I would literally say, like, okay, who are we playing tonight? What's something that I can write as a joke? So,
but why would, so, and I then, mean, to what end though? I mean, to gain followers, to have people talk about what you're talking, like, what, why would you write the joke?
I just like making people laugh.
You just, do you want it to be a,
I generally just like,
have if, people be amused.
If people respond to us and say, like, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, that's all I'm there for. And, I mean, granted, if you look at, in terms of our followers, I mean, it's exponential. Like, we started with 60,000, we're at 560,000. And we can turn that around and sell more revenue and sell more sponsorships.
Right.
And, you know, we can target people with ticketing. So it's part of a bigger plan. But at that point, like, I was much more, I'd respond a lot more to snarky fans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had a lot more comebacks. We just, we were more assholes.
Yeah.
Where now it's a lot more fun and just more of an appreciation of hockey and the game.
It's, you're, I mean, I think the Twitter feeds for NHL teams that really thrive are the ones that kind of match the vibe of the team or the impression that we have of the team.
Agreed.
Columbus is the goofy little puppy nipping at everybody's feet. And the Kings are this team, or have become this team, that knows how to really piss off people. They piss off people because they win. They piss off people because they literally don't try for 5 months and then all of a sudden make the playoffs and win cups. And they piss off people by just destroying teams in the playoffs.
We have no patience for the regular season
right,
at this point.
Exactly. So I think the vibe that you put out there, this kind of like, oh, and also, let's be honest here, when you write a feed the way you guys write it, and the unofficial mascot for the team is Eric Cartman.
Yes.
I think it kind of fits that vibe, too.
And Bailey. Like, Bailey's a perfect example.
Bailey dumps popcorn on people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Bailey is a perfect example of his Twitter feed. Like, that is his personality, and it completely fits in with our brand.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I think it works, is it fits into the total picture. There are some feeds that try to do that, and it's
fake.
Not their team. Well, like the Calgary Flames got in trouble once, I remember, for snarking on the Oilers. I think it was them, or it was the other way around, but, like, it made total sense. Like, you want to have that Battle of Alberta rivalry,
yeah.
But, like, when you don't do that, and when your team isn't seen that way, it comes off as being really odd.
It's definitely hard those first couple times.
Yeah.
Like, when we started doing it, perfect example is the Vancouver tweet.
Right.
We're like, we had done that all season.
Right.
But then all of a sudden we're playing Vancouver in the playoffs and the Canadian media, like, oh, what if this is classless or what? And then we just got over it and we kept doing the same thing. And now it's pretty commonplace.
How do you feel when your tweets become news?
Well, there's positive news and there's negative news,
wait,
Craig.
Well, hold
as
on.
You know.
But I thought that any publicity is good publicity.
It is, to a certain standpoint of, like, it's great when, you know, there's 30 teams, and the LA Kings aren't always mentioned, because when we start our games at 7:30, most people are sleeping on the East Coast.
That's like, true. And as you know, we control the media.
Exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, it's nice to be relevant, but especially now at this point, like, we don't want to be, you know, negative media. We let other things control negative media. We want to be the positive
right.
kind of people. That stuff's great. I mean, I've had 4 tweets on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
What?
Like, right. It's
that,
crazy.
That's a fantastic, like, and it's, you know, I met the CEO of Mashable, and I was like, oh, hey, I'm Pat from the Kings. And he's like, oh, do you run a Twitter account? I was like, yeah. He's like, remember when we did a piece on you? I was like, yeah, I do. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Where that's just cool recognition for
yeah.
what we do.
Totally. Totally. But you mentioned, like, tweets getting notoriety and that kind of thing, and we talked about this briefly before. We were talking in the hallway with a nice gentleman from New York
yep.
who runs a magazine called The Fader. Give him a shout out. There is definitely now a thing on Twitter where if you say the wrong thing in that venue, you will get called out pretty loudly by people. If you write something that crosses the line, what do you do with it? Do you delete it? Do you leave it out there and apologize for it? Have you ever had to do that with any of these things?
I think there's a... it's a case-by-case kind of thing. You know perfectly that sometimes we do have to apologize because we use your website as a medium to apologize.
That's true. That's a question I probably should answer myself because I think it has been a situation like that or two.
Yeah, and luckily I've never been to something that I thought was so overboard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I mentioned on the panel was if ever I write something and I say, oh, I might need to send this to someone to see, that's a first response of, okay, never mind, I don't need to say this. I'll send this to the Royal Half and the Royal Half will post this. Right? That's the game.
Yeah.
There are things where, honestly, I didn't at the time, and a lot of, I still don't now, that people thought were offensive or got upset.
Right.
12 hours later, they're over and they're mad about something else.
Right.
Like, there are these people that look for outrage. And they're, they... for one reason or another, they get so passionate and riled up about stuff that they don't understand on the internet. But it is, like you said, it's tough where, you know, we represent huge brands. So it's not just me on my Twitter account, you know, laughing about jokes.
What I'll say, though, is, and I've, as I said on the podcast before, like, I've called out people for the outrage hobbyist thing. But a lot of that is self-recognition that I am one.
Sure.
And I think a lot of times is that, especially when you're dealing with a corporation, you want to keep pushing and keep pushing and keep the heat on and keep the heat on until you see someone reach their breaking point and have to apologize, then you can kind of claim victory. Now, in theory, you're going to be virtuous about it, and you're going to pick your battles and say, this is something that they did wrong, and it's really wrong, and they need to be called out for it, and we're going to keep the pressure on, keep the foot on the pedal until we fix it. But in your case, I'm sure it's a case of, we know that you respond to people, so if we push enough on you, you'll respond to us about this and apologize.
But only, you know, I think we've probably apologized twice.
Yeah.
In 4 years.
Which is amazing, considering the volume of things that you've written.
But, like, you have to look at it from a bigger sense of, you know, something will happen and whatever, we'll have to have these meetings about, you know, did we cross the line? Did we not cross the line? And most of the time it's not. Like, a lot of stuff gets taken out of context, which is tough on Twitter because it's part of a 3-hour game that we're playing, right? And I've sent 200 tweets.
Right.
But now there's one that gets screenshotted, but it's part of a bigger conversation. So it's tough for me. I have to have the wherewithal to understand, like, okay, this might get taken out of context. I need to make sure that it's okay by itself. Which is really hard.
It's really hard because you never know how a joke's going to land.
There have been people that have gotten mad about something that I literally, one, I don't even understand in the current moment.
Right.
I could have never planned for.
Right.
Like, because you never know what kind of day that person had or
what experiences they bring to the joke.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, we pay attention to a lot of comedy and people get mad about a certain joke because they're related to that joke in some way.
Yeah.
That's doesn't mean the joke shouldn't exist. Like, I get it. Like, personally, I just am not a person that's offended. Like, if you're someone that goes after these accounts for messing up, like, do you have better things to do? Like, I'd rather just, you know, sit down and watch Netflix with my girlfriend and have dinner. Like,
well, I do too, especially the Netflix part. But I have to say that I do understand the idea of sometimes putting the pressure on an official feed that screws up to, because then it lets them know that it's not cool. I mean, especially if it's
in your opinion.
But I mean, there's a certain modicum of taste. Like, I have no problem if somebody pushes back on me for saying something really rude. And I remember, like, during trade deadline, I made two tweets that were, like, on the border of good taste. And me and Leahy thought they were really funny because we were in the same room and we were laughing at each other because we were a bunch of goofballs. But other people were like, you know, hey, you know, it's kind of getting a little racy today. And I recognize that. And I'm glad someone said it because, essentially, much like the commenters can be on the site, sometimes correcting my grammar, it's not good, people on Twitter can sometimes say, the thing that you're doing is really funny in a certain context, but maybe not necessarily appropriate for an audience of 123,000 people.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think you have to look at the volume.
Yeah.
Like, especially, you know, if we say something and 100 people respond and say, hey, this is too far, okay, we're going to go look at that. If two people are really, really, really upset about it, I have to be able to look at the bigger picture and understand that our fans weren't offended. You know, I sent it to my mom. Hey, mom, is this offensive?
Like, yeah.
And she'll just say, I don't even get it. Like,
yeah.
Or whatever. Like, we could say, I've even had, you know, we won the game or whatever. Like, this game is over and we won. And I get, like, you guys are classless.
Yeah, you're gloating.
Right? Like, or the NHL. Last game, the NHL tweeted out one of our highlights, and some Ducks fan was like, oh, you guys are riding the Kings all game long, and it's like, and I respond, I'm like, the Canucks haven't scored. What do you want them to do? Like, you're just getting mad now.
So, you mentioned that, I mean, you guys are unique in the sense that you take a very interpersonal approach to social media. Like, you respond to people, and you tweet at people, and we were talking about before the idea of responsibility for what your followers do. How many followers does the King's account have at this point?
Like 560.
560 some odd thousand people. Do you ever feel responsible when you tweet at somebody and then somebody that follows you decides to jump on the pile and say something rude after that?
There have definitely been times where, you know, I've responded to someone and then someone you know, whether a Kings fan or not, I don't know, like, they could be anyone.
Yeah.
We'll respond to that person again with something that's off color. And I've often, like, DM'd someone and been like, hey, man, like, this was a joke. Like, you know, you went way overboard.
Yeah.
There have also been times where...
Hey, we just almost got service here. We thought we're at a pool, and we thought we were going to get kicked out, but then he kind of gave us the okay sign.
The pool boy wanted to bring Greg some drinks.
Well, I mean, my neck's a little tight, too, so I mean, I was hoping for a little bit of something.
Where were we?
We were talking about talking to people one-on-one.
Oh, but there are these people that say, you know, whether it's a joke or whether it's, you know, we get a lot of stuff that's super homophobic or racist or whatever. I'm going to respond to those people. If fans decide to then go attack that person, you know, good.
Like, yeah.
That kind of stuff doesn't need to be on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want it there. So, and a lot of times then they apologize. Mm-hmm. Whereas maybe they wouldn't have apologized if, you know, if I don't respond to it, that person might not ever recognize that what they're doing is wrong.
Yeah, and that's the real conundrum for me right now, because I get that from people a lot, where it's the, you don't have a right to respond to somebody because you are opening the floodgates to allow your followers to get into the conversation. And I'm just like, but then what is it? Then it's just I'm muzzled.
Yeah.
I'm gagged. Like, I can't get called out and then respond to it or correct the record for somebody if they're saying something incorrect.
Read our mentions a lot.
Yeah.
So what's...
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
what's the
same
difference?
Thing. Right.
If they're... And I've had stuff that all of a sudden 20 fans are tweeting at me like, hey, did you see this tweet? I didn't see it. I go back and it's some terrible thing that someone wrote.
Yeah.
I might respond to it.
Yeah.
You know, these people... And us too. Like, we need to be held accountable at some level.
Right.
And I have a very... far bar of what's okay on the internet.
Right.
There are just five or six things you should not say because
right.
they're what awful people say.
Right.
If I see that stuff, I might tend to respond to it.
Speaking of awful, how did you maneuver the choppy waters of the Slava Voynov situation?
No comment.
You just no comment on that?
No comment.
No, aka you can't comment on that, the question I'm asking, or you just didn't comment on it at all?
No comment.
Just overall.
Overall, a whole
giant hulking massive ball of no comment.
There's a giant no comment bubble.
Yeah, because not anything you say, you can't.
The only thing that I do have to say that was really funny, and this has happened the first time in my life, is Danny Zollers and I, who runs our game entertainment, went to a restaurant, walking out of the restaurant, and a TMZ guy with a camera ran up to me and said, dude, oh man, I love your Twitter account. And I was like, oh, cool, man, like, that's awesome. Dude, you guys are so funny, like, so good. And I was like, yeah, man, like, what's going on? Like, right here, camera 2 inches from my face. Yeah, man, what are you filming? And he's like, I gotta ask you about Slava Voynov. And I was like, man, I run a Twitter account. Like,
you got asked by TMZ about Slava Voynov?
TMZ, baby.
Wow.
Didn't make the broadcast, but...
But how?
I don't know. I don't know how they found us.
Yeah.
But, hey, that's where I am at this point.
There you go.
But no, I no comment.
You're
You're
a TMZ-level celebrity. You're as famous as somebody who was like a third lead on a 1970s sitcom coming out of a restaurant right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't wait to see who follows us. You know, I think there's people spying us from this pool right now.
When the verdict comes down, will you comment on it?
I will not. PR team, Michael Terry, our PR team will handle it.
Right. This is hypothetical. If he's...
Greg, I'm not going to talk about this.
Okay. That's fine.
It's a not...
You can't talk about it. Even like a hypothetical. Let's say there's a guy named Slava Voynov. Okay, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Switching topics. You mentioned the Royal Half before. Was it your idea to get the Royal Half involved with the LA Kings?
It was Dwayne Hankins.
Oh, he's the Trailblazers. The Trailblazers, right, yeah.
He and Blake, he and the Royal Half.
Boop!
he and the Half, as he likes to be called. Struck up a deal a while ago, and then Dwayne left, and I've kind of, the Half and I have become very good friends and kind of cultivated how it works.
Mm-hmm. How does it work?
It, you know, the Half is much busier than he was a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we like him writing for our website. He sits next to me in the press box, so I will bounce jokes off each other. And like I said, there's a lot of stuff that I want to say that I can't say, so I send it to the Half. There's screenshots of, you know, ridiculous, like, our Facebook page is a gold mine.
Yeah.
Of just hilarious things.
Yeah.
So I sent it to the Half, he posts it. I use him like, I don't use him. We work like he's a member of the media that I'm just closer with than any other member of the media.
Interesting, okay.
You know, I would rather have him write for our site because he does something that's so different than what the LA Times and the LA Weekly and right. the LA Daily News, and that stuff is so repetitive
now. Do you still have to keep him at arm's length, though, as like almost like he's media still, or do you understand that, like,
yeah,
he's cool?
He is certainly media.
Yeah.
In my world, not so much, but like our PR team,
right.
he's media.
Right.
He's not going anywhere.
You said the local media is too repetitive now. What do you mean by that?
I think, like, you know, long form written, you know, these game recaps that they got to get in before the paper's printed. I think there's value to it, but me as a 30-year-old, like, I don't pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah.
Certainly people younger than me don't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, whether it's shallow or all just getting dumber or whatever, like, I'm more interested in a cool gif of that game.
Yeah.
I want someone's opinion on the game.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Someone's opinion that I value, whether it's you or whether it's John Rosen or whether it's the half. Like,
that's always been the baffling thing for me, is that, like, in the last decade, we've seen the paradigm shift where anybody who offers an opinion about anything gets traffic.
Yeah.
And yet newspapers are still requiring their people to do essentially what the AP does.
It's a box score.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I read these things and it's written, it's already done by the time the game's over.
Right.
Which completely could change the tone of the whole piece.
If you talk to somebody after the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's boring.
Right.
Like, I watch the game.
Right.
I get it. Like, that's cool. Like, I know, you know, this guy had Corsi, whatever, Fenwick, whatever. Like, or this person scored at 7 minutes. Like, I get it. I want, and the same, we have the same problem with post-game quotes, I find now.
Yeah.
Like, how much value do we put in post-game quotes of Doughty saying we need to play 200 feet, 60 minutes? Like, it's the same thing every time.
Right.
So, what do I need to read that again? I'd rather, if someone has an interesting opinion, whether it's the half who makes jokes or Rosen who knows a lot more than I do about the Kings, like, there's some sort of personality to mm-hmm. it, which I think we've done with social, that a lot of these writers and bloggers do that the traditional media don't.
That's what's amazing about you guys, is because you are this total newsroom now. You have you guys making jokes, but also giving all the information from the game on a tweet-by-tweet basis. You have the half offering analysis. You have Rosen, who, when I write about the Kings, more often than not, it's going to be from a giant monolithic quote sheet that he's transcribed from Dean or from one of the players the night before, or the three words that Daryl gives.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable to me that, like, if you're a Kings fan, you literally, with all due respect to Helene Elliott and everybody else who covers the team, you don't need the papers. Everything that you need from about the team is coming to you from the team, and it's frankly not, it doesn't feel like PR.
No,
and that's the most amazing thing about it.
And that's the thing with Rosen that has been the best. And again, that's a Dwayne Hankins creation of the LA Kings Insider.
It was Rich Hammond before John,
yeah.
And then essentially the Kings, for those who don't know, created their own beat writer.
Yeah, and we have a beat writer who flies on the plane. He won't report, you know, then that's a real gray issue of, like, wait, you're part of the media. Like,
yeah.
You're getting access that I don't get. And John is very professional in what he can and can't say and what he can, you know, what he knows. But it's fantastic when we have our own media. You know, we don't have to rely on LA Times to write about us.
Right.
We have John in the room who has, you know, probably even better relationships. Like, he has relationships with Dean and Daryl that most people don't, because he's employed by us.
Right.
And he's around more often than not. And he's a great writer. So John, having John's been great. And the three of us, me, John, and the half, you know, the three of us sitting next to each other. So it's sort of this, it is a very collaborative effort, especially during games with the three of us.
I guess as we close up here, and thank you for your time. I know you're very busy here at South by Southwest.
Of course, I have a few screenings tonight.
Yeah, me too. I'm trying to get into, what are you seeing tonight? Or what are you trying to see tonight?
I have to look at my list.
I'm trying to see the Raiders thing, Raiders doc. I'm trying to see Ex Machina, over there.
I'll go see that.
Try to see that as well. And then I want to see that thing, that midnight showing.
The problem is, you got to see stuff that you might not be able to see for a while.
Right.
Right? Like, Ex Machina comes out next month.
Yeah, so then maybe
but
not
I still
see
really
that.
Want to see it.
Yeah, me too.
So it's tough.
But it might be packed for here.
It's a big theater, though.
Yeah. I just saw Inside Llewyn Davis for the first time, so
fantastic.
I'm in a really big Oscar Isaac kick.
And then
now.
Tomorrow, they're doing a panel with Oscar Isaac and the director.
Where's
about AI.
Man, I didn't even explore the film side. I have a film badge. For those who don't know, by the way, let me tell you, let me give you a little FYI as Pat Luzon on his phone for a second. Everything here is packed. It's like 8 lines deep.
A lot of lines.
It's insane. So I've learned, in my first day at South by Southwest, as a Southwest virgin, as someone who's, you know, getting the blood dumped on him as a virgin, I learned last night what it is. It is, you talk to enough people during the day where you develop plans B through F.
Yep.
And then when plan A is a shit show, you have a fallback position.
There's so many things here.
Yeah.
Right? Like at 6 o'clock tonight, I just looked. There's like four things that I could do.
Yeah.
So I'll go to one if the one's crowded. But the other thing is, you know, these lines. There was a line last night for the Final Girls that I saw.
Yeah. Final Girls, by the way, is the next Cabin in the Woods, according to
it is. About it. Yeah. There was a line two blocks, and then it looped back around the block, and then went across the street. Yeah. Everyone got in.
Last night.
So it, like, these venues are big. It's just, the line is intimidating.
Last night, we tried to go to the official party, couldn't get in. We tried to go see Spoon, couldn't get in. We ended up meeting a girl who told us about a Washington, D.C. trying to pitch the startups party that was happening at this restaurant. We somehow finagled our way in, and it was 25 beers on tap and sushi and guacamole and sliders, all amazing, by the way, for free. And we stayed there until midnight, and then we left and caught Spoon's encore because everybody was leaving because evidently no one's been to a concert and doesn't understand that when the band ends the show but doesn't play two of their biggest hits, mayhaps they'll come back. But luckily no one realized that, so we walked up the exit and got into a club that was literally like 60% full and watched Spoon's encore last night.
There's a lot of free stuff here.
There's a lot of free stuff here.
If you know how to find it, there's a lot of people that have companies that you've never heard of. Yeah. They're going to give you some free food so you can you know,
yeah,
eat some free things.
And they're all I'll tell you this. I've gotten a new appreciation for Silicon Valley since I've been here. All of the idiotic names for tech companies.
Oh, my God.
how hard they try.
Any word.
Yeah.
Now, you know, between Jibba Jab and...
Yeah.
You know,
oh, what are you? Oh, we're Finagle.
Yeah.
Oh, what are you? Oh, we're a B2B company that gives people pancakes. I'm like, what is Finagle?
How many times have you heard Meerkat mentioned today?
I know.
It's ridiculous. Yep. I never even heard it before this.
Here it is.
And now it's this big thing, and then all of a sudden Twitter buys Periscope, and now Meerkat's not important anymore.
They're not important. They're yesterday's Meerkat.
It's ridiculous.
Exactly. And what about Pumbaa?
Yeah.
I mean, why is it all about meerkats? You don't even talk about Pumbaa anymore.
That's next year.
Next year. And speaking of next year, sir, so you've conquered Facebook, you've conquered Twitter, and all of it. Where do you want to go next? I was listening to the lovely Felicia Day today talk about Twitch, which interests me as sort of a...
live gaming. Right?
Well, yeah, and that for sports would be very interesting for me, if there's a way to pull that off. But where do you want to take things? And evidently now there's an ambulance going by.
So I don't want to take things to Snapchat. They're going to Snapchat.
It is? Why?
Yeah, man. It's crazy. There's like... there's some.
But
stupid,
why?
There's some stupid number that they'll throw at you, but it's like 20 million snaps are open today or something like that. Like, and even our...
But what's the novelty of it?
Our players are using Snapchat to like talk
because
to their friends.
Because shit disappears?
And our friends don't... Our players don't use Twitter.
Right.
When was the last time a Kings player tweeted something? Like... a month ago.
You should be pretty happy about that.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, but why do you think Snapchat's blowing up?
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't figure it out either.
I'm now at that age where people just tell me to use it because it's cool.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's staying around, and I think the story feature is kind of cool. Like, I could see on a game day where, like, we could cover the morning skate up until the end of the game and kind of put together, like, a cool video piece,
yeah,
video on demand. One of the things that I mentioned, and it's the same with this live Meerkat stuff, is that... video now, you know, we had Luke Robitaille's statue.
Right.
I didn't get cut video of that for an hour and a half.
Wow.
It's over.
Yeah.
No one cares anymore.
Yeah.
They want to see it immediately.
Uh-huh.
They want to see the Instagram photo that I posted. So any ways that we can get video to people quicker or live, you know, and then the VR stuff is really cool. Like,
I just read about that this morning, actually.
Yeah. I've used Oculus, and it's incredible. And I want to get them to a game and just see how it works.
Well, they did a test with... another company, and they did the Stadium Series game, and I was talking to John Collins about it, and he just said it's ridiculous.
It feels so real.
It's going to take away the big swinging dick camera at center ice from TV and allow you to watch the game from wherever in the arena you want to be.
The only thing is that, are you going to sit at home with goggles on?
Ah, but that's the trick, is that if they can sync it to your phone... and you can just strap on a headset with your phone in front of you. But now it's your phone rather than... The big thing for me with 3D TV and VR is, like, you have to get another thing and put it on your face, and now it feels alien. But if it's your phone, that's part of you.
But with a headset.
Okay,
but
if everybody's using a selfie stick, they can put on a fucking headset to watch the game.
I have been here for about 24 hours now. I haven't seen anyone use a selfie stick.
This is good.
Right?
This is very good.
So,
I've only seen one vapor cigarette as well.
So I was thinking, remember how big that was for like a month?
Huge.
It was, like, there were shops all over L.A.
Yeah.
Vape, and, like, no one uses it anymore.
I'll tell you exactly why. Because somebody thought they were real smart and tried to smoke one on a plane, yeah. And all the airplanes said, oh, wait a second, no.
And in restaurants.
In restaurants, too. And everybody thought they were going to get around smoking laws with this stuff, but it was not going to work.
Like, even, yeah, Staples Center, you can't use that crap.
Yeah, exactly. But. No, but I think VR is exciting. Snapchat, I don't quite understand. But
do you understand VR?
I understand. I do, because I saw a movie called Disclosure once with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore, and the entire finale of the movie took place in virtual reality,
yeah.
Where he went and grabbed files.
I played that virtual reality skating game that was in the arcades in the late 90s. That was really
That cool. was always great, too, when you would go to, like, Six Flags, and they'd have a big, like, platform,
yeah.
And then you put on the VR thing, and it looked really cool, except you were at Six Flags in the summer, and it was like 98 degrees, and why would you want to put this gigantic thing on your face, like a face hugger?
I saw Oculus, Facebook and Oculus demoed it for me, and it was
awesome, right?
It almost brought me to tears of how amazing it was.
Yeah.
The handheld one was okay. It was a little grainy, but then they hooked me up to, like, the real machine.
Yeah, it's a game changer,
There's no lag.
Right.
You could literally, like, I was in this, like, sort of like Minority Report shoot 'em up, and you could, like, move around bullets all in perfect real time.
Uh-huh.
It was incredible.
Did you have to carry around the little ball girl who was trying to tell you the future and escape with her?
But I did try to walk too much, and the guy kept pushing me, like, to stay in my little zone.
Yeah.
But what's cool is that I think the NHL and hockey, you know, they like to be the first to do
stuff. They really do, yeah.
So, and we have the money to do this. Like, I talk to the Oculus people all the time to try to get to do something. Even in Staples Center, like, during an intermission, come and, hey, watch this, you know, a goal from Stadium Series. Like, it would be so cool to do it.
The most amazing thing I think they figured out is that the thing everybody says for decades is the game inside the arena is so much different Absolutely. Than what you see on TV. And I think there's no way to capture all of it. But if you can make you feel like you're sitting in the stands watching the game, and when the crowd rises on a goal, you're rising with them, or you're getting a chance to see what happens behind the play, either through VR or through player tracking, now all of a sudden you're opening up the game in ways where it's never been opened up before.
Yeah, and I think there's a long way to go in terms of broadcast. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, even if you watch the Maple Leafs game, like, they have six cameras that we don't use, that Fox Sports
right.
doesn't have. Like,
right.
we're still on the red line camera.
Right.
And that's all it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want to put a camera on the bench. Pull up your smartphone, open the LA Kings app, there's your bench cam. Like, there's really cool stuff that's
who's
really
letting cool. Who's not letting you do that, though?
Fox Sports West.
What?
We don't own the rights to that.
Oh, really?
Right? Like, anything that's on the
ice. Oh, you want a camera like they have on the bench?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, they don't have a bench cam.
They have a bench cam. They have a camera that like they've used it before. I don't know if it's every game, but they have that camera on a bench that, like, looks up at the guys when they're on the bench.
Fox Sports West does not.
No, but Sportsnet does.
Sports does.
Yeah.
But so I would love to just strap a GoPro on there, and we pitched it, and you know, giving you that kind of, you know, locker room cameras or. Like, every Australian hockey or football team has a locker room camera.
Yeah.
So when they go in the locker room, you pull it up on your phone and you can watch whatever's happening.
Okay. That sounds good, but I don't know if Dustin Brown's going to be down for that. But you could Google that or Yahoo it if you want to give me money. But look it up. Or don't. Please, actually don't.
But I think there's a long way, and whether it's VR or just new technology, to make the TV experience a lot better than it is right now.
Going back to what you said, last thing about the video, it really has been giant leaps in evolution. NHL.com video, and then all of a sudden YouTube happened, and now we have users uploading shit from their TVs before NHL.com has it. Now we got Vine. Vine is people shooting their TVs and getting it online lickety-split before YouTube has it, way before NHL.com has it. And then I think the next thing is going to be the live streams, where you're going to be able to clip video and make GIFs in real time from stuff.
I mean, it's crazy.
And be a bit more user-friendly than it is now.
It's crazy to think about this. A fan in Los Angeles can't watch our games online. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
Like, it's 2015. Like,
yeah.
They need to figure this out. There's so much money that you can make from subscriptions to sponsorship to whatever. And I want to watch the games online. I watch the games online. I'm an employee and my account's unlocked and I can watch them online.
Right.
I don't have a cable subscription. I watch them all on Game Center.
Right.
Like, that's how it works now.
But that's the thing. As soon as they realize there's money in it, then all of a sudden they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
That's why all of a sudden the NHL's got a hard on for advanced stats, because we're like, oh, wait, there's people that'll pay for it if we look behind a paywall.
Yeah.
So.
But it's it's so, that's such an archaic industry. I mean, they still use Nielsen ratings.
Right, exactly.
There's like 1,000 Nielsen boxes in Los Angeles, a city of like 6 million people.
Right.
And we're basing off these six, like 1,000 people.
But that's to the NHL's advantage, because they could say, by all of these archaic measurements, our stuff doesn't sell. But by all of our new metrics, social reach and everything else that goes along with it, we're doing really well.
Yeah.
So I think they actually like the fact that there's this Neanderthalic way of measuring popularity of shows and of television, because they can say, well, that's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, during, you know, in the playoffs, we'll look at, in the first round when we're still on Fox Sports West, we can look at Nielsen TV or Nielsen Twitter, like tracks users.
Yeah.
We'll have more users tweeting about the game than watching
it. Insane.
How does that make any sense?
Doesn't make any sense.
Because how are these people watching it? They're at a bar or they're at home that doesn't have a Nielsen box.
Yep.
You literally need a piece of hardware to be tracked for Nielsen. That's ridiculous.
Well, Pat Donahue, we've listened to some Jack Johnson. We've been here at the pool.
We're watching a guy in his jeans with his shirt off flirt with the girls across the pool, which is quite funny. You missed it as you were facing the other way, but
Fulon
just popped his shirt off, sat down, just chatted up the ladies.
Say, hey, ladies.
But now he's leaving alone, so.
Oh, that was that guy? He was wearing his jeans and he was shirtless?
Yep.
Well, that's a look.
He's going to another event, though.
But yeah, and we should probably, too. So this has been a special version of Merrick versus Wyszynski. Real special because Merrick's in Canada. And I'm in Texas, which is farther away than we usually are. And do you have any message, finally, to the Kings fans who will no doubt be listening to this with open ears and open hearts?
No, we play the Predators in, what, 4 hours or so? And, you know, get ready for the playoffs, because that's happening.
Undoubtedly.
I've heard from Luke that we're having home ice, so...
As I said to the good people of Calgary and Winnipeg, like, I love you both, I want you in, but I also love going to LA in June. It's a good time to be there.
Knock the Canucks out, right?
That's cool. That's fine too, but I picked them to be in the playoffs, so they have to make it at least.
What if the Pacific was Anaheim, LA, and then three Canadian teams? It would be very different.
Do you want to apologize me formally for 2012 and taking the cup away from the Devils?
No. I still love that moment.
It's what, Steve Brindy running into your guy?
That 5-minute major. Right? It'll go down in history.
All right.
Hey, we already won that game before.
You probably did.
Thank you. Thank you.